everybody, and welcome and happy new year to Coffee Science Guru. I am Josh. I am a week back from holidays, and my brain has not kicked over to full gear yet. But luckily we have Adam here, who is always in high gear.
Except I also got back from holidays. Oh dear.
And of course Julian is here as well.
And I had a very lengthy and interesting wedding to be part of during the course of the Christmas and New Year break.
Yeah.
Largely, in fact, on the 30th of December. Not the easiest of day to be...
No, interesting timing.
Particularly, of course, as the weather was about 40 degrees. And on a farm in the middle of nowhere, but nevertheless, it all passed off well, and I'm also in recovery.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. So we're all in recovery mode here at Coffee Science Guru.
I think I saw snow on the 30th. It was great.
You're on the opposite side. Wow.
Cool. Today, you know, New Year's future, everyone's kind of making New Year's resolutions. How do we get better with ourselves? So we figured our first episode of, or technically second, but first one recorded of the year, we should talk about sustainability, which inevitably leads to the future. Luckily, Adam has done a little bit of research and has some experience in the field of sustainability. So could you define sustainability for us there, Adam? Because it's a bit of a broad term that can mean a lot of different things, but in this context.
Yeah, I think sustainability is an interesting one. It can mean a lot of different things to different people. So my background as an engineer, I mean, we took courses in sustainability, largely as it focused around industry, but, you know, it doesn't actually really change much. What's sustainable in industry is actually what's sustainable generally. Well, hopefully. But, you know, when we're talking about sustainability, we're talking about the ability of any process or product to be maintained at a certain production level or a production rate, or any activity that could be maintained at some level or rate.
And that indefinitely.
Yeah, indefinitely, basically. Yeah, so you want it to be, you know, you want, if something is sustainable, it needs to be sustainable in a whole lot of different ways. And if you wanted to break it down into three major categories, it seems that people, I don't know, most people generally can only, we can really only handle three things, but I think that there's an appropriate three things in this sort of stage you need to remember. It would be in economic sustainability, which is probably the most obvious one.
So making enough money.
Yeah.
Or like to break even at
break
least.
Break even at or, least. Yeah. Yeah, to, absolutely.
So you, just,
so you can afford to keep going, otherwise, you know, you break, you know, you can't afford to live. You know, in that society of ours. Environmental sustainability, which may sound obvious, but that's basically just making sure that the environment can support the activity that you are doing.
Yeah, so that you actually get back what you put in.
Absolutely.
And
you manage the back end, manage the front end, manage the back end, renewable feedstocks, recyclable or reusable products, all that kind of thing. And then the final one, social sustainability. So that refers to the ability of actual society to support, maintain, I don't know, the practice that you're currently doing. Are people going to be happy? Does it improve people's lives? You know, to, you know, employing people at an appropriate rate, will they be happy to work there? Are people happy to have you in their local area? Among other things.
Yeah, so can you function on a high level, I guess?
If you're
selling bottles of water out of a lake and then you don't get any rain...
Right.
You get no
bottles
of water.
That kind of ruins a lot of different things, doesn't it? That would be an unsustainable practice,
you kinda,
right?
You can't afford to pay your staff, so then you don't sell any water.
Right.
And then...
Right. All those things.
And then you get interesting side effects, of course, like a whole swag of dead fish.
Well, we're talking about the Murray Darling Basin down here at the moment. Oh, my gosh. Let's not open that can of worms. We'll try and stick to coffee, right?
Yeah, we'll try.
Yeah, right. I mean, Julian, actually, we were just talking a little bit about this before. Julian, sustainability with you, you were saying that, I don't know, it wasn't a word that necessarily... So Julian, by the way, Julian's our guru here. Julian's kind of been in coffee. How long again, Julian?
Well, it's well over 50 years now.
Yeah, yeah. So sustainability...
I'm not counting now.
I think you said 53 and a half, didn't you? Anyway.
But well, if you lump it all together, it's about 55.
55, right. There you go. So sustainability in coffee specifically, I mean, how have you seen it evolve, change? I mean, when was it a thing? Has it been a thing for the whole time?
Or? Well, I'd have to admit that I think for a long period of my coffee career, it has not been a thing. You use stuff and inevitably it got thrown away and very rarely recycled. from a personal point of view, of course, being a product of the Second World War and the decades-long aftermath of that. We ate everything, we wasted nothing, we threw nothing away, and what you couldn't actually eat, you put in a drawer and kept for some other purpose, which I know is laughable now, but there is a grain of truth in that. And so I do have a practical way of living, which is probably not acceptable to those people today.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. Like, I think there's a little bit of a movement to move back towards buying things that are of a quality that you don't need to replace them so much. I know with like things like leather boots and like anything like furniture and electronic equipment and stuff like that, I think there is a movement back towards that. But it's interesting, even if we wanted to, it's hard to find. Like, if you wanted to buy a toaster, like, they're not made to last, and then they don't have, you don't go to your local hardware store and the guy there fixes the toaster for you. You just throw it out and buy a new one because it's cheaper. So it's interesting how, even though we might want to be sustainable in that way, it's we're not really given the option anymore.
No, I think in my family we had about two toasters which lasted together around about 20 to 30 years. That's, and in the last 10 years we've probably had three or four, and they are not repairable. They've got all sorts of funny screws in them which prevent you from opening them for a start. Anyway, yeah, there aren't any spare parts.
I think it's called fake economy or something off the top of my head.
Right,
you're probably getting a bit off,
no,
off
it's
track, but yeah, like you yeah, anyway, I'm trying to talk about stuff that I'm not qualified to talk about.
Yeah, and I know much about the fake economy, but I certainly think, you know, the movement towards, I think, I guess, consumer culture has certainly changed things. And I think for me growing up, I don't know, just for the record, I'm mid-30s now. You know, I think the practice of buying, you know, buying new something breaks, buy new.
Yeah.
You know, that's certainly a culture that I think I'm actively myself trying to change a little bit. You know, I will personally now buy things of quality to be able to repair them rather than necessarily buy the cheapest thing and then replace it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's one thing. I think, you know, reduction in your consumption, I think, is one way of being sustainable. I think the other concept of reuse, or saving what isn't used for another time to be repurposed or other things, is certainly a concept that plays very well into sustainability. And I think it's one of those things in the coffee. So we had a coffee sustainability night, just moving back to coffee. We had a sustainability evening where we had a look at, well, we did a full life cycle analysis. So just, you know, to open up what that is, a life cycle analysis is a cradle to grave analysis where you go through, treat any process as, well, treat it as a process, right? So for coffee, you'd look right all the way back into the fertilizer that you can use, you know, what energy, CO2 emissions, all those kinds of things used to produce fertilizer. Fertilizer, beans, the bean right through to, yeah, the plant right the way through to, yeah, when you throw away your paper cup at, yeah, the end of the line.
Processing, production, shipping, roasting, everything. Packaging,
yep,
grinding.
Yep. You look at all that, and then you look at all the waste products at the end of the line. I mean, yeah, without going immediately into, you know, around a cafe at least, which is where we want to get to eventually here.
Yeah.
You know, can you, one of the questions that came up is, okay, so we throw away a certain amount of things, you know, can we recycle things? Well, yes, we can. We can recycle certain things. That's all very well and good, but can we actually buy products that have been recycled?
Yeah.
So can you buy plastic forks that have been recycled from previous plastic forks?
Yeah.
I said, and that'll be a fantastic thing to do. I was asked the question, well, where do I buy such a thing?
And is the energy involved in involved in restoring them, so to speak, or repurposing them actually costing more than the end product itself?
Yeah. It's actually, that's a good point, Julian. That's actually a point that plays into keep cups. I think there's a study, I'm trying to remember exactly where it was. It's available on the, I quoted that study on our blog on the website.
Yeah.
But I think it's one keep cup has the same environmental footprint as 20 disposable cups. So the break-even point, wow, effectively on the environment is if you buy a keep cup and use it, you need to use it at least 20 times before it, you know, becomes comparable to the waste generated on the environment by, paper cups. Yeah.
And then if you break it to put it in the
recycling. So if you break it within 15 uses, actually, you might as well just bought the paper cups.
There's a plastic lid and a silicon band.
Right. So, and I guess that's the other thing. There are multiple different kind of cups. And, you know, what played into that was not just the material used to make the Pyrex glass and all the other associated bits.
Mm.
It was also the environmental impact of the soaps that you used. Which kind of soap do you use? Was it environmentally friendly soap? Was it not? I mean, whatever is an environmentally friendly soap, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head right now.
Yeah.
But Yeah, no, it's a very, very interesting point.
Yes. I think it's there's an interesting economic point to buying sustainable products in that the ones that aren't disposable, like the toaster that lasts for 2 years and then breaks itself, the entry level to buying things that last a bit longer can be a lot higher in terms of price. So it can be harder. There's a bit of a socio-economical issue with, you know, buying a $100 pair of shoes that lasts you for 5 years or buying a $40 pair of shoes that lasts you for 1 year. It can be harder for a lot of people to...
Yeah, in some of those cases, I think you get what you pay for, right?
Or even a $1,000 pair of shoes, which will last you half a lifetime.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I've got a few of those at home.
That's right. I believe, and I haven't had half a lifetime yet, I hope.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. But I know I just recently bought a nice pair of boots that hopefully they'll last me till, I don't know. If the calculations are correct, they'll be on 50. We'll find out.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Mine have a 3-year warranty, manufacturing warranty. So yeah. I thought that was at least a good sign.
Yeah, that's right.
And they were Australian made. And
they're repairable though, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So how does the coffee tree sort of, or like coffee growing sort of fit within sustainability? Because I think when we had the event, you made the point of... being a carbon neutral cafe and using coffee trees to become a bit more carbon neutral.
Yeah, right.
So growing coffee.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I think a while ago there were people leveling claims, just to step back a little bit, was with forestry, you know, can forestry ever be sustainable? And, you know, I think people leveling, you know, taking aim at the Prime Minister at the time, who, you know, maybe I won't say. But it was one of those claims like, oh, you know, how can you believe in sustainable forestry? It's a crime. It's kind of, well, actually, no, if you think about it, you know, the Earth's oxygen is replaced by, sorry, yeah, the Earth is oxygenated by trees, and trees only oxygenate while they're growing.
Yeah.
When a tree reaches its full lifespan, it actually becomes carbon neutral, or sorry, oxygen neutral.
Yeah.
It takes in as much, it respires and aspires, I think are the correct words.
Yeah.
Basically, it takes in as much oxygen as it gives off. So actually cutting down a tree when it's full grown, if done sustainably and managed appropriately, is actually much better for the environment in terms of stripping carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and replacing it with oxygen. So in truth, sustainable farming practices are almost the best way of being able to do that. So in terms of coffee plantations, they're almost the ideal crop, right? I mean, I don't think they're necessarily the best crop.
Yeah, because once they're grown, they sit for a little while and then they get replanted.
Well, they also grow fruit, right? Yeah. So as long as the coffee tree is fruiting, it's still growing something. It's still putting energy into actually growing that fruit. And to do that, it requires carbon dioxide to carbonize. So actually, it takes carbon from the atmosphere and creates the fruit.
Mm. Yeah. But against that, of course, the coffee is a very greedy feeder.
Mm.
It requires a lot of nutrients to grow. And it's probably a generalization that, in fact, coffee will only grow really well of itself if it's actually planted in volcanic soils or something
that's
got extremely rich soil cover.
That's true. Yeah. Probably explains why it's grown where it's grown, right?
And why it's not grown in Australia.
And that's right.
well,
maybe there's... that's the other thing. There are technologies, so we do have the technology to try and replace... So activated carbon technology or biochar is a sort of an example of technology that people are trialing to try and... One might call it pseudo-vulcanized, if you could call it that.
You heard it here first.
I don't think that's a term out there. I might be making something up.
That's true. And a very good friend of mine, Nick Repin, who is a scion of the famous Repin's coffee family from days gone by in Australia and in Sydney in particular, had his own coffee plantation up at Byron Bay for a number of years, together with macadamias. He's just closed both of those because he said it's totally unsustainable in terms of the cost of picking the fruit.
Yep. Economic sustainability.
So whilst he could grow the trees, he couldn't really find a suitable market for it in terms of the price that he had to charge.
Yeah, that's a key point. It plays into that. That's a triple bottom line, as we always call it. You know, the environmental, the economic, and the social sustainability. If the economic fails, you just can't sustain it. And it's a shame, too, because it'd be a great thing to be able to grow coffee sustainably in Australia. I've got a couple of ideas on that. But so, I mean, the coffee trees, I think, are one way of, you know, abating carbon emissions across the entire coffee supply chain. But it's probably worthwhile thinking a little bit about where those emissions are generated. So... One of the things that we found, one of the results of the life cycle analysis we did on the coffee industry focused around cafes, because let's be honest, in Australia, that's where, there are way more cafes than, I don't know, coffee farms.
And roasteries.
And roasteries too. Mind you, we didn't look at roasteries as well. Seven miles is a coffee roastery, right? I'm not saying we don't have any wastes.
Yeah.
You know, you centre... Actually, to be honest, I expanded that life cycle analysis on a related note. So actually, okay. I did find that cafes were actually the biggest. Well, cafes, the consumption portion of the life cycle analysis was the biggest emitter, and that typically centres around a cafe.
Yeah, and that's... Or home use. That's taking into account, like, milk and food.
That's exactly right. Yep. That's exactly right. And so that's the thing. If you divide it all up into a few different categories, if I just divide up into five basic ones, only five major categories sort of came to show... Well, there are only five major wastes generated from the consumption phase. And the top, and you know, I think I asked the question generally, you know, where is the, you know, where do people think that the biggest emissions are in? Is it in paper cups? Is it in food? Is it in wastewater? What is it?
Yeah.
And I think most people put up their hands for cups. A few people put up their hands for electricity. But by and large, I think it was cups and waste coffee grounds, I think people thought were the biggest wastes.
Yeah.
Right. And then actually, if you divide it up in terms of carbon footprint, you find electricity accounts for about 55%. I think we count 53.7%, but about 55% of a cafe's carbon emission or carbon footprint comes from the machine itself, the espresso machine.
Yeah, that's assuming everything's coming from coal or something like that.
I guess. So in Sydney, we base it on a 0.6. 0.6 of the energy generated from coal, 0.4 in hydro, because that's actually around New South Wales.
Sure.
We center in New South Wales. That's where we did the life cycle on. But yes.
Yeah.
So in Australia, it's mostly coal. But then you think about the rest of the world. If it's coming from solar, probably wouldn't be so bad.
Yeah.
And you know, nuclear is a different kettle of fish. But let's you know, not go into that in Australia. Yeah. Thanks.
No, we mustn't forget wind.
No, wind. We can't forget wind. There are some places, yes. Tidal.
It's always there.
Tidal, geothermal. You know, right, again, solar thermal. We can. Yeah. Let's. Hey, I can talk.
Yeah, the handful of houses with solar panels that are putting power back into the grid.
Yeah, well, that was one of the solutions. But we'll get back to that maybe in a second. Like, you know, if you want to abate, you know, if you want to save 55% of your carbon footprint, think about getting a solar panel installed in your cafe.
And then again, you got to pay for it, right?
True, but you know, that's the thing. It would probably pay itself back eventually. I mean, if you're generating your own power, you're not paying power bills. So it probably works from the triple bottom line perspective. You'd have to do your own economic analysis. I don't necessarily recommend that, but I would recommend looking into it.
Yeah.
That's the thing with this life cycle analysis. You know, we had a few recommendations at the end of it, but they were generalized. You know, we could put some specific things in there, but really everyone's, it's a case-by-case basis, right?
Well, you've got to have a cafe with a roof.
Well, that's right. Well, your cafes that are in the, you know,
it's
the subways.
It's a very good point, yeah.
That's right, your cafes in subways. A lot of cafes are in malls. You know,
coffee
they don't
carts,
necessarily.
Shipping containers.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So there's no one-size-fits-all with sustainability. You really have to think about what you do.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. For the average Australian cafe, 55% electricity. I think coffee was 0.01% of waste in terms of coffee grounds. Milk was the next biggest waster, about 27% on your carbon emissions, which is significant, but maybe not so surprising when you think of how much milk we use in our coffee.
Yes.
60 mils of coffee at the most, and then 220 mils of milk.
Yeah.
And then there's water, of course.
And there's water. Yep, that's it. And wastewater accounted for, that's the thing, because it's wastewater too. It's not just water. It's water that needs to be treated. And that's where the carbon footprint comes into it. And there's 11% of our emissions are wastewater, and food and some other ones. But and food was 7%. They were the top five. So I put cups in that little graph as well, because the part of the reason I did this is because cups didn't make much sense to me. So paper cups, I mean, I think it was 0.6. It was 0.6%. 0.6% of the carbon footprint of a cafe comes from the waste of paper cups. And I will note that the actual assumptions in this were that every single coffee in a cafe was served in a takeaway disposable paper cup.
That was the assumption, was it?
That was the assumption in the calculation that I used in the life cycle analysis. It said no reusable cups, no sit-downs, everyone in this 100 kilo per week cafe, which is a significant volume cafe, everyone, you know, had their coffee in a disposable cup, and they threw it in the bin, and it went off to a dump and, generated its methane from anaerobic digestion and so on and so forth. Without getting into too many details.
It'd be very interesting to make a comparison between that and, say, Italy, where most of the coffee is still served in China cups, people standing up, maybe sitting down, very few people drinking coffee in the street apart from tourists, who would probably be the main recipient of any paper or disposable cup.
Yeah.
One might actually argue that would actually probably be a nice solution. I mean, paper cups, I mean, that's the thing. Paper cups, if you eliminated that, it's only 0.6% of your entire carbon footprint eliminated. However, I think according to a triple bottom line, I think in terms of social sustainability, I think actually it's a better social model.
Well, it's certainly, I suppose it will capture certainly a big volume.
It'll make your barista happy too, probably.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Actually talking
drinking
to the
more black coffees.
Absolutely. Well, that's the thing, less milk.
I was
that's
come
the big
to that,
one, right?
Yes.
And not being in such a rush or...
Yep, the Italian espresso bar's got it right when it comes to this, I think.
Yeah.
Environmental, social and economic, I think it works
very
well.
Yeah, it's the same in a lot of countries. There's just not that takeaway culture that coffee's more treated. Well, I mean, I guess in Italy it's a day-to-day thing, but in a lot of places it's considered a treat, or it's not something you just have every day, and it hasn't become like a medicinal use.
But that's the thing, though. You got to think about that's the other thing, again, going to social. You got to think about the people around you, and the people are actually supporting your business, right?
Yeah.
You know, you got to, in many ways, you got to kind of do what the people want you to do. I mean, some people like me, I actually like getting a takeaway coffee, take it to my workspace and slowly drinking a large triple shot, whatever, with caramel syrup.
Oh, heresy.
Well, you know, this is back in my uni days. Yes.
Oh, okay.
You sound like a researcher.
Yeah, that's right. And you just sip on that caffeinated drink just slowly but surely. Over there. You know, it was a comfort while actually starting your day doing some work. I'm not saying it was necessarily the most sustainable thing. I honestly didn't think about it at the time. But, you know, that's the thing, right? Socially, it may not be a solution that everyone can take.
Yeah.
It's the same with solar panels. Yeah, so that was kind of the results of the life cycle analysis. It was a bit eye-opening to sort of see what we can do. And the nice thing about doing it is that we can then find ways of minimizing the environmental impact. On a related note, a typical 100-kilo cafe generates as much, what is it? 6 tons of carbon dioxide equivalent per week.
Yeah.
100-kilo cafe, which is not the average cafe, by the way.
No.
But still, that's
a lot.
Well, that's the same. It's the equivalent of 57. There's about 60 cars traveling the US national average.
Yeah, right.
Across that period of time. That's I was surprised it was that much.
I was going to say, I don't know whether that's good or bad.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Well, I don't know.
Do you have a context for, like,
so a US...
Another relatable
fact. 4,500 bacon and egg rolls, I think.
Yeah.
Whatever the sustainable... Yeah, so that's... So, yeah.
That
includes the bacon life cycle analysis, the egg life cycle, and the bread.
There was a very popular research document that came out that studied what industries were the biggest biggest causes of greenhouse gases, and it was like famously in a lot of people's minds that it was animal rearing, so like the food industry and dairy in terms of animals, and then second was transport, and then I think the third was like agriculture or just like farming in general. But it was the head researcher of that came back later and said that was wrong, and they redid the analysis, because when they took into transport, they didn't take into the mining and production of the actual vehicles themselves,
which is a pretty important part of it.
Yeah, and it turns out that the transport industry, including building the parts and mining and all that, was like well and truly like
So if you drill right down into that, you come back to the invention of the wheel.
It was much higher
a little bit. I mean,
the animal industry.
Well, that's the thing with life cycle analysis. That's another point to put out with this study as well, right? Is that life cycle analysis is always going to be limited and constrained. You have to put it in boundaries.
Yeah.
Because you could look at everything right the way back through to how many 40,000 years ago. So what impact did the dinosaur have that eventually broke down?
How many people are driving to your cafe?
You know, like, kerogen and
Or how many people are walking?
Where does it end, you could say. I mean, I ended mine, I bounded it literally just around a cafe and took into account a whole bunch of other life cycle analysis results and put them into this equation. Conveniently, I found a couple of other papers that I that got very similar. It was within, I think, what was this? For this cafe, I think I said it was, 6 tons of CO2 a week. I think that paper said 5.5 tons or something like that. Or roughly around, they didn't say an Australian cafe, it wasn't for that, but it was in the same order.
Yeah.
Which probably meant a lot of the assumptions, those things were similar, which was nice. I shouldn't say, it's nice to be able to do some work and then someone else comes out independently with a separate number.
Yeah.
That's very similar, so that's nice.
So we've been talking about like the carbon footprint of cafes and this coffee and that sort of stuff, but with like paper cups, disposables in particular, how much of an impact does the actual physical waste have, like things that can't be reused? Or is like when we're talking about sort of recycling, it's always going to be about sort of global warming and climate change and that sort of stuff? Or is there a physical impact? Because, I mean, obviously with plastics, that's a pretty big deal as well in terms of being sustainable, because it's like a type of pollution.
So what are the impacts? I think you mean just specifically with paper cups?
Oh, with like recycling, I guess.
What are the impacts?
Or like... Yeah, because I mean, it's a bit hard to put a number on.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, look, we put numbers on it. As an engineer, we like putting numbers on it, but what does it actually mean? So what does this amount of CO2 in the atmosphere actually mean? Well, it results in, you know, there are a few different effects. So I think one of them is global warming directly.
Yeah.
That obviously, I shouldn't say that's almost obvious now. I don't think I have to explain what that means.
I would certainly hope not.
Well, perhaps to one or two presidents.
That's right.
Sarah, yeah, we've added a new letter to Coffee Science Guru. It's now Coffee Science Guru Politics.
Yeah. I won't go into that too much. We don't name names. We're not going to do that.
Email. Maybe we can say something divisive enough that someone will actually email us.
Well, actually, I mean, CO2 isn't actually the most potent global warming gas, by the way. I think water is actually one of the most potent global warming. So steam.
Oh, right. Yeah.
What about, so if we're just thinking about paper cups and CO2, CO2 footprint, that's what that means. Global warming, but also ocean acidification, CO2 in the air means CO2 eventually in the oceans, which means more CO2, carbonic acid, acidification.
Yeah.
And there are a few other impacts on it, acid rain, the general decrease of pH, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know, other things, you know, you're looking at land toxicity as well. Mm. So, for example, you throw a paper cup, put it in landfill, okay, it degrades aerobically or anaerobically. Normally that involves some kind of microbes. Microbes have some kind of terrestrial toxicity in terms of local bug growth.
Yeah.
Literally chemical buildup, which is not necessarily healthy for people.
I think the jury is out as to how long that will all take.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah. Well, right.
Is it dozens, hundreds, thousands of years before?
Yeah.
It
probably eventually will turn into crude oil, right?
If we leave it.
Wait a long time for that.
Yeah, very long time for that, from whence it came.
And then we
for
can
the most part, right?
Just recycle the whole life cycle.
That's right. Well, that's another part of it, right? I mean, it's what can be sustained by the environment. It's like CO2. I think it's like some 10,000-year cycle for it eventually to make its way to the bottom of the ocean and eventually buff it out or something like that.
Yeah,
it's like it's a significant time frame when it eventually moves around like that.
Yeah.
I learned some things across in the US.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. About global warming.
Yeah, they do some stuff.
They do lots of good stuff.
They've got a lot of infrastructure to do support that kind of stuff. It's just the...
Yeah, they do.
We get a bit of a warped political...
But that's the other thing. Like, you know, fertilizer usage run off. You look at eutrophication. You've got a whole lot of, you know, destruction of waterways. You know, things that are happening in the Murray-Darling Basin. You get algal blooms, algal growth. If you don't get sustainable agriculture, you get, you know, local fish dying, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of those are the impacts. But I think that probably makes... Maybe it's a good point now to think about solutions.
Yeah. So don't litter.
Well, yeah, okay, that's one.
Yeah, if I see one more 7 miles coffee cup on the side of the street, I'm going to get real mad.
Yeah, right. Are you going to pick it up, though?
And the big problem is, of course, it got our name on it. Or somebody's name on it.
On the cups?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, right? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
No more names on paper cups.
Right. No. So coming back to cafes and coffee, what can a consumer or a barista or a cafe owner sort of do to try and limit their carbon footprint, i.e. turning stuff off and or...
What can they do?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think one of the things we're promoting is effectively like... it's a waste minimization hierarchy, if you want to call it that. So we're looking at a series of four different things. You go down the chain in terms of actual impact you can have. So we basically think that the four things you can do are, number one, eliminate the waste. That's the best thing you could do, if possible.
Yeah.
Number two would be substitute with something else that has less has less waste.
Yeah.
Number three would be reducing the waste, just using that, but maybe less of it. And then the fourth thing is what I've called administrative control, but that basically means out-of-the-box solution. So maybe you can't have any impact on your actual carbon footprint or your actual environmental impact, but perhaps... there's something else you can do that could, like almost like a carbon credit system.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something positive you can do somewhere else.
Yeah, like plant some trees.
Plant a tree. So that's sort of a final thing. Maybe we don't want to talk about that. So if we think about elimination, you know, that's kind of hard. I don't think anything a successful cafe will be able to eliminate. I think it'd be very hard for a successful cafe to eliminate almost anything.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I think I looked at something like meat. Meat would be a reasonable thing to look at, perhaps. But again, a lot of people going there for a bacon and egg roll aren't probably going to like it if you go tofu and egg roll.
Yeah, so then it comes to the economic sustainability.
Yeah, exactly. So you got all the solutions you look at, I can eliminate coffee from my menu. No, it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
I'll turn my machine off and make coffee by like rubbing my hands together or something. That's not going to work.
You get rid of straws and...
Yeah, getting rid of straws. So that simple things like that, getting rid of straws or having only, reusable cutlery. Things like that.
Yeah, doing a lot of places do like a ceramic cup rental system. So you come in, if you don't have a keep cup, you can take a mug and bring it back.
Yeah.
Either leave a cash deposit or they just trust you to bring it back or keep it.
But it's a bit of a fag, isn't it?
Look, as I said, the cup thing's interesting because it's 0.6%. I think actually the easiest one we found was actually switching machines off overnight.
Yeah.
That's eliminating your
waste. Well, certainly in the bad old days, you had cheap electricity and you had very large boilers, which took a long time to heat up. And, of course, in the winter, they heated up the cafe at night if you left them on.
No, you're right.
Sorts of benefits derived from that. But, of course, the possibilities for machines, boilers, etc., blowing up or flooding the cafe were also there.
Yeah.
These days, of course, very small boilers heat up very quickly and you wouldn't want to waste too much electricity because we all know the cost of that.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, turning machine off these days, I mean, as you said, it protects your machine. I think some people think it doesn't. I think they think there's more risk of blowing it up in the morning when you turn it back on because you've turned it off because of thermal expansion and contraction, which is a little bit bogus, actually.
Well, there was a school of thought which said that actually boilers wore out more quickly and electrical elements wore out more quickly if you kept turning them on and off.
Yeah, by thermal cycling. But that's how they work, though, right?
They're constantly
that's actually how boilers work. Yeah. They're not like ramp up, ramp down. They're actually just. I mean, maybe sorry to some machine manufacturer out there. Maybe there is a couple out there that do a slow ramp. I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it's on off. So believe it or not, your machine is turning on off anyway.
Yeah.
I think really, then you weigh that against corrosion rates, which happen almost exponentially faster at those temperatures versus turning it off and leaving it ambient. Unless you're in Australia right now at 40 degrees Celsius ambient, it's not that far
just
off.
Just turn your machine off and keep using it anyway.
Yeah, we're talking Celsius, by the way.
As it is.
We're talking Celsius, by the way, if you're listening from somewhere that uses Fahrenheit.
of all the options.
That's right. What is it? Minus 42 times 9 over 4? I can't remember. Maybe it's ad.
So is looking after your kit possibly a way?
Well, that's the thing you balance against it,
being
right?
a bit more responsible. I mean, like, obviously...
Yeah, like cleaning and
coffee roasters, getting rid of rocks from the... bags of coffee so you're not chewing through blades a bit quicker hard to measure, but
I'd say that would be minimal waste, but I think elimination, the simplest one is just to turn your machine off overnight. I think that would save the only time that wouldn't be or if there's an eco mode, even better, because it keeps, and believe it or not, eco mode, if you keep an eco mode at 60 degrees Celsius overnight, it actually saves half the power at idle. So if you keep your machine 100 degrees Celsius, you'll literally half your power bill overnight by having it at 60 degrees Celsius, not 95 or whatever it happens to be.
Multi-boiler machines, some of them you can turn groups off if you're quiet.
So that's a nice simple one. Reduces corrosion rate, reduces wear, should the machine should last longer. You should reduce your energy bill. I think we calculated, I think it's $300 a quarter if you switch it off between the hours of 3 o'clock in the evening. No, sorry, 6 o'clock in the afternoon and I think 5 in the morning, I think.
Yeah.
That was how the calculation was based. So $300 a quarter in Sydney.
It's a lot.
It's a good amount of money.
Yeah. Over time, that's
a bit of
cafe for 3 years or 10 years or
it's not nothing. The next step is obviously substitution. So substitution, I think the best one here would be something like the solar power solution that we suggested before. Substituting your power instead of from coal, plug in from the wall, actually set up a solar panel, if possible, which is probably not that possible.
Well, I mean, or some very fit people on a treadmill.
Get some rotisserie dogs. Get some.
Rotisserie dogs?
Yeah, was it the French Terriers?
Just get them running.
Just run on the wheel.
I don't know if I'd go into that cafe. Would that be animal cruelty? I don't know. So we're talking about substitution. Let's move on. Reduction is the next thing. So reduction, I think the simplest one I think we worked out here was milk. Milk is one of those things you could probably reduce by a factor of 10%. So that's the thing. I think if you reduce your milk by 10% inside the cup that you add, so you instead of using 220 mils, you use 20 mils. Oh, sorry. Instead of 220 mils of milk, you use... 200 mils or 180 mils, but 200 mils would be their reduction.
So what we're treating, we're training people to actually use or accept less milk in a cup than we are currently? Is that the idea?
Well, I think that's the idea, right? There are certain cups you can buy that are, small, medium, large, that are about 10 mils, 20 mils less than what you currently use. That would be actually, believe it or not, if you used that, whatever the actual social ramification of that was, whether people actually detected the actual taste difference and no longer liked your cafe, that's something you have to weigh up.
Yeah, it's all worked out that they're paying more for their cup of coffee than they should.
Yeah, although what's 10 mils of milk cost?
Too much.
Yeah, that's true.
Today, it used to cost almost nothing.
Well, there you go. We'll reduce the cafe's cost by that much. But more than that, you'd actually completely eliminate all the environmental impact associated with paper cups from your cafe if you reduce milk usage by 10%.
As a balancing act. Yes.
If you wanted to. I mean, that would be...
If you can get away with it.
I'm not saying that's something you should do. I'm just saying that is what the numbers would tell you.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the thing to make your decision on.
Maybe
you want people
obviously.
To appreciate coffee that has a higher concentration of actual coffee in it. But, that's for the shop to decide.
I suppose it's true that, marketing people in major chains of cafes and so on are discussing this kind of thing as we speak.
Yeah. I mean, from a cafe level... try to give away your ground coffee if you can for gardens.
Oh, it's an excellent soil amendment compound.
Although you were thinking that putting ground coffee into landfill might actually help landfills. That was just something you floated.
It was an idea that I had. I think it's one of those ones you put organic materials into the environment again, they are biodegradable. They do degrade naturally, although I'm not sure necessarily you want to be doing that all the time because you get different growth of different things. I think using...
You put things where they weren't.
Putting coffee into compost, using it as a compost, probably an excellent thing. I think caffeine's actually a natural pesticide. Julian, you've had some
experience. I haven't noticed that in my garden.
Oh, no.
I'm busy squashing caterpillars every day.
Oh, they like the caffeine.
On some of my treasured fruits, etc.
Get you some Robusta.
I'm using the wrong kind of
coffee. Dial up the dose of caffeine. Yes. Boom.
Less specialty mulch.
Yes.
So either they're going to eat it faster or they're not going to come back. Who knows?
But it's supposed to be really good for mushrooms. Growing mushrooms on... ground coffee. Was it Costa Coffee in the UK? I think a while ago you sent us a link that Costa
Indeed,
Coffee
yes.
or someone in the UK was using it became more profitable growing mushrooms and selling mushrooms from coffee waste than actually just roasting coffee and selling coffee. Or am I,
is that what you said, or is that a hybrid of what I found out?
There
was
Windhoek Brewery. They were growing shiitake mushrooms on spent brewers, and that spent brewers, because it was shiitake mushrooms, the value per kilo, they were growing more kilos of it than they were of,
They
didn't do that.
We all like
because they were a beer company.
Drink more coffee, drink more beer.
Drink more coffee, drink more beer, buy mushrooms made from spent coffee grounds and brewer's yeast.
Yeah. Cool. All right. I think that's probably plenty of stuff about sustainability. Of course, always, if you have any questions, feel free to check out the editorial on the website and to shoot us an email at podcast@7miles.com.au or send us a message on Instagram or Facebook or any of those futury contemporary ways of communication. Or come in and say hi, because we're here Monday to Friday.
Have a coffee.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you, Adam.
Oh, thanks, Josh.
Thank you, Julian.
Pleasure.
Julian. This has been Josh. Coffee Science Guru. Happy New Year.
See you guys later. Happy New Year. Bye.
Bye.